So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who are excited that spring football is underway in Norman, Oklahoma. This is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. I'm Jesse Crittenden, and I'm joined as always by Brian Clinton. Brian, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm good. Excited. Spring sports are in full swing. March Madness is a couple weeks away, which is really the only time I truly tune in for college basketball, like full time. So excited about that. Spring football, man, like this is time of year. This is talking season. So this is when everybody gets really...
Sunshine pumping season.
Yes, everybody starts getting really excited about what could be. So excited about that. Excited about softball. It's just good to be alive, man.
I call this time of year the Bermuda Triangle, because spring football starts, basketball is getting to the end of the regular season, and softball starts conference play, and it all happens within like a 2 week.
Yeah.
2 to 3 week span, it all kind of happens. And I know I was talking about this earlier, but just to give some people some insight on what my day was like yesterday, I'm going to get on a soapbox for a second. So yesterday, in the morning, John Mateer press conference, Brent Venables press conference, Jim Nagy press conference. Then we get like a 2.5 hour break. I drop Parker off at the radio station. I go home. I write. I come back up to the stadium. Then we do 34 newcomers. Do, I think, 18 in the first block for 40 minutes. They just all come out. And you go to each table. As you know, you've been through that process. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining. So it's the freshmen first. And then the transfers, and that all takes a little more than an hour. And then I left from there to go to the Lloyd Noble Center to cover OU men's basketball against Missouri. And then today, I got back a couple hours ago. We're recording this Thursday, at 7 o'clock. I got back a couple hours ago from open practice. We got to watch about 30 minutes of practice today for the first day of spring practices. Brian, this is... not today so much, but yesterday, genuinely, mm-hmm. one of the longest days I've had on this beat in a very long time.
See, ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, this is not just Jesse telling you how long his day was. This is him publicly shaming me for not being there to help. had prior obligations with kids and
family.
Dad life.
Family's all important. Sometimes things are bigger than sports.
So yeah, I feel truly awful, but now that it's spelled out for me, it's even worse. So again, I'm truly sorry, but
I didn't even mean it that way, but if you want to take it that way,
suck it up.
Yeah, that's well, and also complaining like it wasn't awesome and that I'm not eternally grateful and appreciative of this job.
As Parker says before we get out of the vehicle on every road game, boys, we get to watch college football day and get paid for it.
Yep. And we get to do that because of the wonderful people who watch us and subscribe to this YouTube channel. Yep. And so never complaining. I don't want that to be misconstrued. Never complaining. However, yesterday was just a lot of socializing.
That's a long day.
A lot of
That's
public.
Yeah.
And then to end it at the we've done that media day a couple of days before under Brent, where we get to talk to all the newcomers and stuff. But adding Mateer, adding Nagy, and then going to Lloyd Noble Center. I had not done that because there had not been a game on the same day. Long day.
Yeah.
And before we talk about yesterday, because I know you and I have a lot of thoughts. Before we talk about yesterday, I wanted to briefly talk about a couple of the observations I wrote about from the open practice today that you can find over at OUinsider.com. And I wanted to throw them at you because I don't want to detail everything just because I wrote about it. And if people want to go find all the notes, they can go to OUinsider.com. But there's a couple of things I wanted to point out at you. There's three, actually. Two of them concern the tight end room. One of them, apparently, this is a common air raid drill that some teams run. I had not seen it at the University of Oklahoma. I think one of the things, this is year five for me covering football. Gone to some spring practices in my day. Even the transition from Lebby to Latrell, a lot of the drills, at least that we got to see in open portions of practice, were pretty similar, if not the same, give or take. Today was, boy, the Arbuckle, the Ben Arbuckle stamp on practices is in full effect. And one being that at some point we were all kind of off to the side, all the reporters were watching. They've got four quarterbacks simultaneously throwing to four receivers, all running different routes. You've got like a running back running a check down. You've got a tight end running like a corner route. You've got a receiver running up the seam. You've got another receiver doing something. It's all chaos. It's four quarterbacks throwing four balls at four different receivers. That was really interesting. And then also we saw, like, you see a lot of the quarterback running back, like RPO drills. That's pretty standard. And we saw a lot of that. Saw a lot of quarterback, like there were more quarterback running drills than I'm used to seeing. And I think, you know, John Mateer's got full control of that room and those drills already. But we didn't really see outside of a couple of quarterbacks in the past throwing at the same time. Didn't see a whole lot of that. Today was, again, I'm not saying it's the craziest drill ever. I'm saying from an open practice standpoint, had not seen a drill like that. And usually day one of spring practices is a lot of like, okay, let's get everybody integrated. We're getting settled. This was not that, at least in the open portion of practice. I don't know. Is that a common drill? Do you hear quarterbacks running?
That sounds like a little bit of West Texas flair to me. Like that sounds like you kind of nailed it there. That sounds like an air raid thing. But I like it. I mean, if you think about it, you're maximizing the amount of throws, you're maximizing the amount of routes, like the amount of connections. You're not having to wait to sub in the next guy and the next guy and the next. I mean, it is efficient. So, you would have to have your head on a swivel, I would imagine, to be running that drill.
Well, and it was also funny because, like I said, tight ends running a corner route. And at first they're doing it to the left side of the field. We're all on the left side of the field off to the sidelines. And they actually, somebody said, hey, watch out on the sidelines. And then they start the drill. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's because if I had stayed right here, Jaron Kanick was going to run my ass over. but it was also interesting. I think the thing for me was it wasn't just some of those drills, but it was the speed of those drills. Like even I tweeted one video. But it wasn't just as simple as, okay, well, it's Mateer. He goes up and throws. Then it's Michael Hawkins. Now it's Cole Gonzalez. You got a lot like Mateer would throw, then quick sub in. Cole Gonzalez would throw a couple. Then Mateer's back. Then Hawkins comes in. And then even in the four quarterback drill, like you would have four quarterbacks with one off to the side. Then after three throws, Hawkins comes in to take somebody's spot. They all rotate down. Like
it seem like those guys had already had like they had the gist of it down, like what they were doing, or was there quite a bit of, hey, get where you're supposed to be?
Not from the quarterbacks. No, I think from the receivers running routes standpoint, I think there was definitely some like that stuff's going to get cleaned up. Right. And then also I think you saw some, like you had some drops. and stuff like that. And actually, it got really interesting when it was Arbuckle running through everything, but then Brent Venables comes over for that particular drill with the four quarterbacks, and he's standing right in the middle of the field. But he's doing the same thing. Ball snapped, four quarterbacks get the ball, look downfield, and he's immediately turning and looking at the tight end or whoever is running through the middle of the field, and he's turning and looking to see if they catch it or not. And so, like, you definitely saw some day one jitters, new coaches, newcomers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's that kind of stuff, the nuanced things of that. I mean, they'll have it down by the end of the week or end of the next practice. It'll be a well-oiled machine, but those kinds of things are always fun. And that's interesting. I'm excited to get down and see some of the new drills, because that's, I don't know, just being a former coach, that's the kind of stuff I'm enamored by. So,
I think there was a part of me that was like, it's easy to get so swept up in all these changes and all these hypotheticals and stuff, but then you get to the field and it's like, oh, there's like that tangible human impact of like, no, this is how the offense, this is how these guys run drills now. This is the different day-to-day mode of operations. The other thing, I'll throw two quick things at you. One of the most obvious things from looking at the new roster is you go down, see who all is listed where, weights, that kind of stuff. Devon Mitchell at 275 stands out. And then you see him.
So he's legit 275. Like,
I mean, I think so.
It wasn't a typo.
Like, no. And I know there was some weirdness about how he was listed for the bowl game. He's bigger. He just is. And when you stand next to him, he's bigger.
And people forget how young he is too. Like whenever you're that young, I mean, you can put on significant weight, especially in your second year. So that's good.
No, he's, I mean, I would say he's the biggest tight end in that room, but the biggest thing for me, and I'll just be straight up, I'll be honest, Jaron Canick moving to offense hadn't really been on my radar that much, if I'm being honest, just from a, like, how much stock am I putting into things? And it doesn't have anything to do with Canick specifically. It really doesn't. It's that I've seen the defense to offense thing before. I've seen that. And two kind of different situations, but you see DJ Graham in the middle of the year move to offense. Now, he asked to do that, which Brent Venables pointed out to me when I asked him about that situation last year. And I knew that. I understood the difference in that situation to Jacoby Johnson. I knew that. But DJ Graham never saw the field as a wide receiver. And then when the coaching staff moved Jacoby Johnson or had him start working stuff with the offense, you probably remember, Jacoby Johnson took a grand total of 7 snaps at receiver last year.
Yeah.
So you just don't, I'm just always skeptical of that move. I have no idea what's going to work. I have no idea what that's going to look like. I cannot tell you how many snaps you could tell me he's the number one guy on the depth chart when season starts. You could tell me he sees 5 snaps all year. You could tell me either of those things. I put more stock into it now after seeing practice.
Interesting.
Not even from a, oh my God, he looked so great. I mean, from a like, okay, like he's clearly worked the last several weeks to get his body more like a tight end. He's bigger. And actually being there and seeing like, oh, he's just working with the tight ends. He's not messing with the defense or the linebackers at all.
Yeah, it's like a full transition.
Yes. Like, this is not some halfway guy like DJ Graham asking to go to offense, or Jacoby Johnson moving there because of the coaching staff, because of injuries. This is a guy, but also still hanging around with the defense. Jacoby still ended up playing a ton of snaps on defense last year towards the end of the year. This is a full transformation. This is a full transition of a guy going from linebacker to tight end. And he's already started over the last several weeks. And it's clear that this spring and the summer is fully on that vision of him playing tight end. And I'll just say, like, the one thing I will say, and I think it's the fairest thing to say, is that tight end room is wide open.
Yeah.
I think You could tell me Devon Mitchell is the starter. You could tell me it's Cade McIntyre. You could tell me it's Will Huggins. You could tell me it's Jan Kanick. I have no idea, but Kanick is full-blown tight end, and I am fascinated to see how what that looks like as the spring goes on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that gets lost a lot of times, you know, sometimes when you look at it from a perspective of athleticism, your good tight ends are just different athletes. Like they just are. They're not only are they big enough and strong enough to handle blocking assignments, but they have to be able to put a move on a safety, catch the football. Like there's just a lot that goes into it. And athleticism was never the question with Jaron Kanick. Like the dude,
no, dude's athletic.
He's a freak. He's a track star. I mean, everybody saw his, and they're starting to recirculate again, his offensive highlights from high school where he's just like running seven people over in the same play to score. Dude's incredibly athletic. So it is, that is very intriguing. I do wonder, you know, he's listed 6'2", 230, I think is what he was. And so there was a lot of film last year from what Arbuckle did at Washington State that isn't necessarily like an inline tight end, but more like an H-back role, which is something I think Jaron Kanick could fit relatively well. I mean, just from an athletic standpoint. Now, again, no idea what it's going to look like whenever the lights actually come on, but that is an intriguing thing to at least think about.
It is. And God, there's so much more I could talk about. Even just from that open portion of practice, the running back room to me is endlessly fascinating to me. Especially with Barnes out, Sam Franklin's getting a lot of second team reps ahead of Xavier Robinson and Taylor Tatum. I could talk for a million hours about that room specifically, and how much of an enigma it's been the last 3 years. But we'll have tons to come at OUinsider.com. Shameless plug. You can go see my notes on everything I wrote about the open portion of practice over at OUinsider.com. A lot of them's offensive focused. I think for the next open practice, I'm going to focus a lot more on the defense.
Sweet.
But head over there. Let's talk about Media Day, because that was Wednesday. Good. And again, I mean, Brent Venable spoke for 40 minutes. Nagy spoke for, I think, at least 30, if not more. Mm-hmm. Mateer spoke for 15 minutes. A lot of ways that we could go with this. I'm going to start on this with you, and you tell me what stood out. I was really impressed with Jim Nagy. I was really impressed with him, listening to him. He's a very personable guy. It's one of those things, like, it's a small thing, but it's like, you know, we're getting called on for questions, and every time we get called on, he's saying, hey, you know, he said, hey, Jesse, whoever. He
addresses you by name. Yes.
And it's a small thing, but it's not disingenuous. I think it's very genuine. I think he's a very personable guy. I thought his answers were incredibly thoughtful. And one of the things I asked him, you know, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but I asked him, you know, Brent kind of said, this takes a lot off his plate. I mean, Nagy coming in, him getting to focus more on X's and O's, you know, how much is that a priority to you? And, you know, I highly encourage everybody to go watch that on OUinsider.com, his whole presser. But Jim made it pretty clear he wants this to be collaborative. I do think there's going to be some push and pull between the two of them, because there's a couple reasons why. One, general manager is still a pretty new role in college football, man. Mm-hmm. And with how much the landscape is changing, Jim Nagy is not coming in with a clear set of this is how we're going to do things. I think stuff is going to be adjusted. Stuff is going to be tinkered with. They're going to have to change things on the fly as we get through the next few months. So, and one of the things he kind of talked about was he said people have asked him, you know, what happens if you and Brent Venables disagree on things, especially when it comes to player evaluation and player, you know, high school player evaluation, transfer player evaluation, retention, all these different things. He was like, no, there's enough prospects, there's enough recruits, athletes to go around that we'll find enough common ground.
Yeah.
But I think that there's going to be so much push and pull on them with them, not only because of the landscape, but also because typically, I mean, especially for in the NFL, you think of a general manager, you think of a guy that's going to have final say on
yeah,
roster moves.
Yeah.
And I think the push and pull here is Jim made it clear that, you know, this is still Brent's program. This is Brent's vision, but there's going to be a lot of opportunities where they either need to find a way to get on the same page or find a way to work through disagreements.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and that's kind of what Jim said, is like this, the next few months is going to be about kind of figuring all of this out. But I'm curious for you, what stood out just about Jim and what he had to say yesterday?
Well, like the first thing is, like, it's finally that moment he gets in front of the mic. Like, you've kind of waited. The announcement was a couple of weeks ago now, and it's just like the anticipation of hearing him, you know, finally sit down and talk as a member of this program. It was surreal a little bit for me, just because Jim Nagy is that's just such a big name in the scouting industry and in the transition from college to pro. Like, it's a big name. And so that part was like somewhat surreal. But I think I want to just jump in and add to where you were going with that. I was very impressed with how not just well thought out the answers were, but it was the detail and the attention that it appears Oklahoma is putting into his role. It's not just like this placeholder. How do I explain that? It's not this placeholder role that I'm afraid a lot of schools are really going with. It's like, oh yeah, he's the general manager, but like this is the head coach's team. It really feels like, I don't feel like Nagy would have taken this job if he didn't have some role of leadership to fulfill. And that's going to be huge. That's going to be so big, because it's no secret, Brent Venables is a huge personality. He is a guy that demands respect, not in like a pushy way, but like, he's been around the block. This is a guy that, he knows football, especially in defensive side of the ball. There's just not anybody out there with the pedigree that he has. So for there to be the mutual respect that these two guys have for one another, I think it was important to go out and get a guy that is going to be able to push back on something if he feels the need, and somebody that will be heard. It's not somebody that I feel like is going to be walked over, if that makes sense. Not that I'm not trying to talk down about Coach Venables. It's not at all what I'm getting at. It's just, I think you can sometimes be set in your ways, and sometimes the best thing to have is somebody that has just as much or a different level of experience, that sees another perspective, and that rounds things out well. I hope that makes sense, what I'm trying to get at there. But
no, it does. It does. And I think because one of those things is going to be, I mean, if you listen to Nagy talk, I mean, he was pretty transparent about what they're wanting to do. He wants to hire a big staff of guys that, or of people, and specifically with NFL experience. Mm-hmm. He wants a front office model filled with people who have NFL experience to take a lot of stuff off of Brent's plate. And he mentioned, like, he, like, head coaches shouldn't be dealing with agents and shouldn't be negotiating contracts. That's not a head coach's job.
Yeah.
But one of those things is when you build this staff of people who are going to be primarily focused on talent evaluation and retention, there's going to be a lot of working with Brent to figure out what are the positions of that are most valuable? What are the players that are most valuable? But then also, and Brent kind of touched on it, there's still that element of like, if this hasn't been said explicitly enough, which I think it has, but if it hasn't been said explicitly enough, OU is moving to an NFL style front office. Like, this is
plain and simple. Yeah.
Yes. This is an NFL style front office. They're bringing in a guy with NFL experience who wants to build out a staff with NFL people. Like, it's, and they're going to be using a lot of models. And also with this incoming salary cap or this incoming revenue sharing, they're going to be working. That's going to basically be like a cap that NFL teams work with. And they're going to have to make decisions based on that cap on how they want to build out this roster. The other side of it, though, is that Brent said there's still some things about college football that are not like the NFL, and it's specifically with relationships in recruiting.
Yeah.
So, but like, as to kind of what you said, that there's push and pull, or, you know, Brent being such a strong personality, there's going to be, to me, my takeaway was these two got, like, Jim Nagy is coming in with an NFL type of mindset. Yes. Obviously, understanding the college is different, but an NFL type of mindset.
From Brent, an evaluation standpoint.
Yes. Yep. And Brent is still coming in with this still true understanding that there are aspects of college that are unique to college. But now you've got to blend these things together.
Yep.
And that's going to be something, right? I mean, I think that's, I mean, Brent's going to have to, like, even though this is still his program, you've got somebody now coming in who's going to have their own staff that's going to be able to make decisions.
Right. It's going to force both guys to have a lot of mutual, like, there's going to have to be trust, a lot of trust. But it's just like in the NFL, I mean, your GM and your head coach, if you have clashes in those two departments, you're going to have chaos. Like, you're not going to have a lot of success on the field if your coach and your head coach and your GM aren't seeing eye to eye on things like that. I mean, it's tough. It's in a competitive environment. That's just the way it is. One of the things that I do want to say, the GM position right now, I mean, it's completely new. There's pretty much no format to go off of. Like, you have no idea what it's going to look like in the college game, outside of just relating it to the NFL. But I think I would guess in the next 3 to 5 years, once this all kind of becomes the norm and everybody has adopted this new style, I think the GM position is going to become incredibly important for people's success. And for Oklahoma to go out and get a guy like Nagy who brings this, you know, this plethora of information and experience is great. And I was really impressed with just how driven, like how direct his answers were. Like, you can tell the guy knows what he's talking about. Yeah. He didn't get up there and give coach speak. I mean, it was like he answered your questions, and it was, you could tell he was going off of 20 years of eval work, and it was really impressive.
Well, that's going to be the other thing of this is, and Brent kind of said this, that you're bringing in someone who has decades of experience in player evaluation.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to take some off his plate, even in terms of that. I think a lot of the collaboration is going to be on Nagy and this staff not fully working on player evaluation, having a huge list of players, specifically maybe targets that wouldn't have been on this coaching staff's radar. Maybe you've got targets from all across the country, right? Mm-hmm. But also targets specifically related to what this program is valuing in terms of position and in terms of NIL worth and value.
Yeah.
Right. And then that's going to be coming to the coaching staff for them to have input on, you know, really like these guys, we can miss on some of these guys, but it's going to be like, what is the coaching staff looking for? And then it's going to be the front office being able to answer questions immediately, like, okay, this is what you're looking for. This is the list of players that could fit what you guys are looking for within the dollar range that we can afford. Because he said that. That's the other thing is, again, this is going to be a different era in college football. They're going to make decisions based on money. Everybody wants a 5-star defensive tackle, but because of OU's other roster needs or because of maybe OU has a bunch of other guys at defensive tackle, maybe in the past they would have gone after that defensive tackle. But now this front office is probably going to come in and say, look, this is just crunching the numbers, looking at our other roster needs, this just isn't going to work. And so that collaboration is going to be
so interesting.
Really interesting. But I do think if you listen to Nagy and you listen to Brent, I think they're starting this from the right page. I think, you know, Nagy's not going to come in and tell Brent how to coach X's and O's.
Right.
And Brent's not going to come in and command Nagy when it comes to player evaluation, specifically because Nagy has done that for so long.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. And I think that's what's, I mean, ultimately that's what you hope is, regardless of who you root for, regardless of what program you follow, if your head coach can get back to coaching football, like, which is, it's crazy to say that, but if he can get back to coaching football, which a lot of head coaches haven't had the opportunity to do in years, I mean, that's really what's best for the program. And if you've got somebody that can handle talent evaluation, and Nagy has proven that, it's kind of like you don't want your head coach to be completely hands off, but if he can leave the vast majority of the man hours with the GM in that role and just coach football and do what he's best at, I think it's that gives you the best chance for success.
Well, and one of the things that Nagy said was, I thought this was really interesting and kind of went under the radar. He said, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've had college coaches call me, asking me to keep them in mind for NFL jobs because they're looking to bounce.
Yep.
And so I think he's coming in being like, okay, well, head coaching in college football has gotten to be too much. And that's why he kept on saying over and over, I'm here to help. And I think where he knows he can help is not only player evaluation, but the thing he really honed in on was player retention. He was like he was like, we've kind of got this piece now. He kind of compared it to the NFL. Like the worst case scenario in the NFL is you draft a guy, he's really good, you develop him, he plays a big role, and then you lose him.
Yeah.
That's I think player retention is becoming as important as player evaluation. And
agreed.
Now you've got a GM in to not only identify which players do we really need to make sure we keep, but then also dealing with the other side of it. And that's dealing with agents and dealing with NIL evaluations and that stuff. I mean, when I was hearing him talk yesterday, it really put into focus just how much head coaches have had to do the last 3 or 4
years. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Crazy. The level of, like, there's not a lot of times where the general person that you're talking to would say, those guys earn every bit of their paycheck when they're making $7 million a year. What, like, dude, head coaches in college football over the last 5 years, 4 years, it has been like the month of December, I can't even imagine. Like, I don't even want to begin to think what it would look like with signing day, the transfer portal, bowl prep, sending seniors out, getting draft grade evaluations. Like, dude, there's so much. And with everything, and that's not even including, hey, coach, I think I'm going to go somewhere else because they're going to pay me more in NIL.
Right.
So much. So, I bet the happiest person in the room outside of Jim Nagy being here is Brent Venables.
Well, speaking of Brent too, because and that's part of, and that's, and this is connected, part of why it's going to be important for Nagy to come in and help and to bring in to take stuff off of Brent's plate is because Brent is betting on himself in 2025.
Yes, he is.
That was the biggest takeaway I had from the 40 minutes that Brent talked. And he was asked specifically about why he's calling the defense, why he felt that was important, and if he's doing that because it's a big year. And go listen to it. If you haven't gone to listen to it, go listen to his answer.
Yeah.
Because it's not only just in how defiant he was in terms of why this is the right. I mean, he's, this is a quote. Why am I calling the defense? Because I'm good at it.
Because I'm good at it. I love that quote.
I mean, it's kind of
awesome.
And the fabulous thing about Brent, because his answers are typically very long winded, is because he could have left it at that, but then he explained himself. And yeah. I thought it was incredibly interesting to hear him talk about how defense was really good last year. Special teams was really good last year. Offense was historically bad. He used that. He said historically bad. And the thought process here, and look, this is, we could talk about Jim Knowles and a bunch of other stuff, but to me, that he made it pretty like he spelled it out pretty clearly what he's thinking here. And the thinking is he knows how to call defense. He's good at it. And he hired Ben Arbuckle to come in and take care of the offense, and he's confident he can keep the defense where it was or even make it better than it was last year, and that he's confident he can do that. So now it's just about the offense coming along.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not an offensive guy. He's a defensive guy. So he went and got out the offensive coordinator. He went and got out the offensive coordinator that he wanted and to come run that, because he's going to run the defense because he's confident with him in tow. That eliminates a variable.
Yep.
It eliminates, because he even said, like, it's, if you bring in somebody new, you're going to have to either teach them a system or they're going to have to come in and bring in their own system.
Implement, yeah.
This is basically, I think, in his mind, and this is, again, aside from the very interesting stuff he talked about, how he's always felt like he's being under the water, he's in the water being drowned. That's how he's always approached his career. To me, the simplest way to put it, Brian, is to me, he's taking the reins of defensive play calling because that's eliminating a variable.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah. That answer specifically, what stood out?
Well, that was the part that he added to that particular quote, saying that it was a place of comfort for him.
Yeah.
Interesting. Like, yeah. I mean, that's an obvious thing. Yeah, I mean, he's comfortable with it because he's done it for 30 years. But that, to me, if he is able to call the defense, that means a couple of things that don't really come to mind, first of all. First is, whenever he's calling defense, that means he's not communicating with the offensive staff, trying to make adjustments during when the defense is on the field and the offense is on the sideline. So that's going to require him full trust, like fully trusting the other guy, Ben Arbuckle in this case. The other thing that it does is in game planning and install, just what you do, your adjustments that you make throughout the week for your opponents, things are going to look different for him on the practice field too. And I would imagine in the meeting rooms, he's still going to have like that head coach presence, obviously. But I think it says a lot that he has all the trust in the world in Ben Arbuckle at this point in his career. Like if Brent Venables in his fourth year going into what is undoubtedly the most, he's got more pressure. I think you could say he's got more pressure than anybody in college football going into this next year.
Yeah.
If he is betting his career, his head coaching career, on a 29, or how old is he now? How old is Ben Arbuckle?
30.
Yeah. If he's putting that much stock into this and he's comfortable and he's saying it's a place of comfort for him to be calling the defense, that says, to me, that says a lot about what he expects from Ben Arbuckle. I'm going to ask you this. This is something that stood out to me. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it's just because the grind of an SEC schedule week in, week out really wore on him. It really seemed like Brent Venables had been sleeping a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like he just had like, he seemed more like the guy first, second year, like kind of light behind the mic than he did, which is ironic considering the amount of pressure he's got. So to me, it felt like he is in a position now where maybe he's more comfortable with what he's having to do with his role. He's more comfortable with everything that's going on, but he also seems to kind of thrive in this pressure moment. So I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but I thought the guy seemed a lot more comfortable, like he's been sleeping a lot better. So
I'd agree with you because I think his whole answer to that question I thought was just endlessly fascinating, and both in what he said and how he said it.
Yeah.
But look, could you have a discussion about this and start talking about potential concerns about his ability to still be a head coach and oversee the entire program, or game management issues and all that? Like, could you have those? Certainly, you absolutely could. And probably we will have those discussions as we get closer to the fall. But in a very simplistic way to look at this, he's not wrong. Brent Venables' track record of calling defenses is as good as it gets.
Correct.
And the defensive improvement the last 3 years speaks for itself. And last year, if you put an average offense with that defense and that special teams, OU probably wins 9 games. And so for him, are there going to be other stresses that come from calling the defense? Sure. But in his mind, this is the cleanest, simplest thing. And it's the one thing he has not done since he came back to Oklahoma, was be solely responsible for this defense.
Yeah.
So I think for him, and that's why he started, why he started talking about how he's so comfortable. Like, he even mentioned it's 3rd and 12. We got to get a stop. Crowd's going crazy. I don't hear the noise. I think for him, this is literally his happy place.
Yep. 100%.
Again, in a very simplistic way, he's not wrong that this might be the best thing to do.
Well, and part of this quote of his is, it just kind of goes in, because I've had the same mindset that I don't go like this and, oh, everything's on the line, he's fighting for his job. He said, I've been fighting for my job every year like somebody's holding me underwater. We just talked about that. Do we need to be better? You're damn right. Does my mindset got to change? No. Why am I going to call the defense? Because I'm good at it. So does his mindset change? That to me is like his way of saying, I know what this program needs, and dang it, I'm betting on that, and I'm so confident in that, I'm going back to my roots. And I mean, like you just said, he's not wrong.
we could get to the end of next season and Oklahoma goes 6-7 and Brent Venables is fired. And we could also get to the end of the season and Oklahoma's 10-2 and fighting for a playoff berth. And you know what? The one commonality between those two things is that this is going to be done Brent Venables' way.
Correct.
Come hell or high water.
Yep.
And really, when you look at, I mean, he got two assistant coaches on defense that he wanted. They were not flashy hires. They are not two guys, Wes Goodwin and Nate Drayling, are not guys with extensive amounts of success. But he wanted those guys. They got his offensive coordinator that he wanted.
Yep.
They've brought in a high-octane GM to help take things off his plate so he can focus more on X's and O's. OU is doubling down, and Brent Venables is doubling down on the way that he wants to do things.
The way I'll put a cap on the Venables thing, from my perspective, is if Brent Venables is, and I'm speaking to the fan base, if Brent Venables is the guy that you thought he was when Oklahoma brought him in, you want this to be the way that he is handling things when his job is on the line. If you still believe that he is that guy, which a lot of people do, I am included in that. I believe, given the right circumstances, Brent Venables is an incredible football coach. If you believe that, if you still believe that he could be the guy at OU, him doing it his way, this way, this is exactly what you want. I don't know what that's going to look like. Given their schedule, can't even promise that that's going to look like 8 or 9 wins. Who knows with that schedule? But
or injuries.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. I mean, there's no way of knowing. But as far as a personnel, how we're doing this, they're doing it Brent Venables' way. That it's exactly what you want.
Ben has said it better. Let's end this by talking about some softball, which opens tomorrow. Or they open a 3-game series tomorrow at home against South Carolina in a series that I am so intrigued to watch. I am so intrigued to watch this series. This is a two and Patty said it was the first thing she said when she was asked about it on Tuesday. Their numbers and their stats are eerily similar to ours. And when you look at these two teams on paper, what they've done so far, OU 4th in the country in scoring, South Carolina 6th. OU's 4th in the country in on-base percentage, South Carolina 2nd. OU's 18th in batting average, South Carolina's 9th. OU has 8 shutouts, South Carolina has 7. Fielding percentage, OU's 3rd, South Carolina 7th. The only 2 unbeaten teams left in college softball. And, oh man, I think this not only is going to be a stiff increase in competition, I think we're going to find out so much about this softball team this weekend.
Yeah.
I think you could tell me OU sweeps. You could tell me South Carolina sweeps. Yep. You could tell me OU gets 1, OU gets 2. I mean, this is one of
yes.
This is one of the first series in a very, very, maybe ever covering this program that I'm like, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen. I really don't know. When you look at this series, just broad view, what do you see?
Fireworks. Like, to me, and this isn't a knock, obviously, on either of the pitching staffs. I mean, they've both been really good. You just said it. There's 15 shutouts between them. This feels like it has the potential for lots and lots and lots of big hits. Like, I think they're... This is... I'll be completely honest. Coming into the season, everybody does it. You look at the schedule. You see all these teams Oklahoma has to face, where they got to go, who they got to play. South Carolina coming to Norman was like, okay, so they start off with a manager. Like, that's... You can handle that before going to Fayetteville. Yeah. It's like, that is not at all how it's played out. I mean, if you go back, I don't know how many fans have done this, but if you go back and watch them play Duke, I mean, dude, they were like dominant.
30 runs.
Yeah.
In 3 games.
It was big time. And so, yeah, I mean, what am I seeing? What am I looking for? I think there's a potential for a lot of home runs, a lot of extra bases, and there's a lot of new for South Carolina. I mean, this is I believe new coaching staff, right? New roster. There's a lot of new, but I do think Oklahoma is going to, this is going to really send them, either into overdrive or the first game, you might see deer in the headlights a little bit with some of the younger players. Like, now how they recover from that is going to be the whole story, but it's a big moment. It's a big opponent, and yeah, I can't wait, man. This one's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, and you said it, one of the reasons why we didn't see this coming, why South Carolina is so good, Quincy Lilio, the former Oklahoma player, who, I'll be honest with you, look, if you get on an Oklahoma roster, if you get on the Oklahoma softball roster, you're a good player.
Correct.
Baseline, good player. Quincy didn't play because she was behind an incredible veteran class, and it spoke more to how good Ella Parker and Cassidy Pickering are that they were able to break the lineup last year.
Right.
I did not have high expectations for Quincy going to South Carolina. And Brian, what has she done? She leads the entire country in batting average and on-base percentage. The entire country in both categories, she is number one.
Yeah.
She has been phenomenal. Phenomenal. And she has zero home runs. She is just
wild.
Damn solid at the plate. She just gets on base. She's either going to get a hit over half the time. She's going to get a hit. And if she doesn't get a hit, she's going to get walked.
Yep.
And I mean, I really did not expect that. And it's not just her. It's not just her. I did not think Quincy Lillo was going to be, through 20 games, one of the five best hitters in college softball. I just didn't see that coming. And that is an interesting wrinkle in this, because she told a South, or it was an outlet, can't remember if it was South Carolina oriented or national, but she said, I came to South Carolina because I wanted more playing time. Her coming back to Norman is an interesting wrinkle for me in this series, man.
Yeah.
Is it going to be too much for her, or is she going to kill it?
Yeah.
You know,
that's going to be, I think at some point, I mean, she's going to have a moment. Like there's going to be a moment in one of these games with how she's played that, she makes something happen, and it'll be interesting to see like the emotion there. It'll be interesting to see how the fan base reacts. You know, I'm excited that you get to see her back in Norman. Cause that was one of those roster casualties that you're like, you know, I remember thinking, dang it. Like that's somebody, you really expected to break through this next season. But, yeah, dude, for her to be, what is she? I don't have it in front of me. She's batting like, it's almost,
it's like 540, 550.
Nuts. Yeah.
Her on base percentage is almost 700.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Here's the thing. This is, and you tell me what you think. This is what I think. Again, this is South Carolina. I mean, their ERA is 2.1. It's good. Pitching staff's been solid. I think, like, you look at that Duke series, they outscored them 30-16 across the three games. They outhit them. I mean, Duke got some runs on the board.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina just blasted past them. I think Oklahoma's offense, I think they'll be able to find some success. I do.
Yes.
Here's the two things I'm wondering. As good as this pitching staff has been, OU is top three in ERA. Isabel Smith's been great. Sam Landry's been great. Kirsten Deal's been great. They have not faced an offense like this.
Right.
And while Oklahoma's offense has been awesome, they have hit a ton of home runs. They've hit 39. They're third in the country. The one concern I would have, I think Oklahoma's offense will score. In the past, I would have said, if you're somehow in a battle of fireworks with this Oklahoma team, they're going to kill you.
Right.
Even if you score some runs, which OU barely ever allowed that. But OU's offense is too good. You're not going to outscore them.
Yeah.
My concern would be, if South Carolina starts putting runs on the board, is Oklahoma going to be able to keep up? Because as good as this offense has been, and I think they've been one of the top five best offenses in the country, and I think that can continue. They've hit a lot of home runs that even Patty and a couple of the players, this has been a little surprising how many home runs they've blasted. My worry is, if the defense isn't into things and South Carolina's generating offense, is OU going to be able to keep up?
Right.
I think that's what I'm watching for. I think, because even in that Duke series, Duke put up runs.
Yeah.
They scored some runs. They had a 7-run game and lost.
Right.
you know, I think that's part of, I think we're going to learn more than anything about, we're going to learn a lot about this pitching staff, lot about this pitching staff.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you kind of look at it You just mentioned Oklahoma's 39. They've got 39 home runs in three games. South Carolina's only got 19, and they're still scoring at the rate that they are, which means, yeah. I mean, it just means they're efficient on the base path. So that is a, it's funny that you say that. That was kind of the concern for me, is if the well runs dry as far as home runs go, is Oklahoma going to be able to put the ball in the gap enough to, are they going to be able to manufacture runs the old fashioned way, the way that South Carolina has? Because that's a lot of that vast majority of the way South Carolina has played offensively, it's been moving, putting people in scoring position and moving base runners. And if that's the situation Oklahoma gets itself into, that it could be problematic. But I didn't think that this team would be 40 home runs in 20 games. I just didn't see that happening, but here we are.
And here's the thing, part of why OU's offense has been so potent is, in addition to the home runs, they've been great elsewhere. They've also been really aggressive on base paths. They're 25th in stolen bases. You've seen them the last,
which is crazy. Like, that's just awesome.
Yeah. You've seen them. They get on base. They're one of the most walked teams in the country again. It's not that they don't have other ways to score. That's part of it, why they've been so versatile. But right. It's like you said, I mean, even they got out of that Bowling Green game that they almost lost because Cassidy Pickering hit a home run.
Right.
That's how they got out of that game.
Yeah. The track meet where it's like two runs, like that's what would be the concern, is can you do it consistently and in those moments, especially when you know the other offense can.
Yeah, you have to assume, just because of the rise in competition, you have to assume the home runs are going to slow down a little bit. They're averaging almost two a game. They're going to slow down a little bit. That's where I think, I think part of what makes this weekend so fascinating is, while South Carolina is really good, and I think we're still learning how good they are, they're going to get tested again next weekend at Arkansas. They've still got to play Bama, Texas. I mean, you look at the rest of this, you know, and we've seen Patty Gasso teams grow as seasons go along. But, you know, if they lose two or three, it's going to be one of those weekends where it's like, okay, what went wrong? Because they're going to get tested again and again and again. And that's one of the things I'm watching is, hey, if they get through the weekend with a home run and they lose two or three, you know, or just a couple and they lose two or three, it's going to be, in this SEC, are they going to have to? Because that's the thing with these other OU offenses in the past, the home runs never really slowed down.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We just still haven't really seen this team. This is still a new team with a lot of new faces. You know?
Yeah. Well, and the other intriguing part with conference play starting up is, especially in the recent past, it's been outside of that series against Texas, even though, for the most part, Oklahoma still dominated that and Bedlam. Those were like the two weeks you had circled on the schedule. The rest, I mean, it sounds terrible, but like the rest of the Big 12 slate, you pretty well had an idea Oklahoma's going to sweep those games, they're going to sweep those games, and you might drop one to Texas or one to Oklahoma State. But outside of that, you're pretty well going into the Big 12 tournament as the one seed, like they really weren't worried about it. Well, now, it's a lot different. It is a gauntlet. Not only is your team young, but you're playing, you look up and down the stat sheets on offensive and defensive numbers, Arkansas, Florida, Tennessee, like those are teams coming up down the road that you're going to have to deal with. And South Carolina once looked like the team that you're probably going to be able to get past without an issue. And I'm with you, man. Like I have no idea what's going to happen. I am 50-50. Literally have no idea who's going to win this series. Would not be surprised either way.
I gotta tell you, man, there's a part of me, I am more excited for this series than I have been in a long time because of what you just said.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is anyone going to be surprised? Is anyone going to really be surprised if Oklahoma sweeps and they do it reasonably comfortably? No.
No.
But when I'm telling, if South Carolina if South Carolina wins this series, do not be shocked. Just don't be. They're a good team.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma has not faced anyone like them.
Right.
They just haven't. Yeah. If you had a prediction, if you had to make one, I wasn't even going to do this. I wasn't even going to do this, but I thought of it just now.
Dang it.
You had to make a prediction. Where? How are you going? What are you doing? Also, I think for reference, also, just to make this, I think ESPN has this as the series, as the number one series to watch this weekend in college
football. Yeah. Yeah.
All eyes are going to be on this series.
I'll say South Carolina wins Friday, Oklahoma wins Saturday, Sunday.
I like that. I think maybe Oklahoma gets punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
Early.
Like the young team, like it feels like you can only prepare for things so much until you get into the moment, and then you kind of have that foxhole moment where it's like, holy crap, we're in the middle of this. Patty Gasso has the opportunity to kind of help everybody rebound, and then they pick up the series, couple of tough wins. So I'll say OU wins the series, but they lose game one.
It's interesting you say that, because actually Patty was asked about what are you most excited to learn about your team? And she specifically said, I want to see them face adversity.
Yeah.
And I think she meant the conference as a whole, but she was also kind of talking about this weekend. And I kind of took it as her saying, like, at some point in the weekend, they're going to get hit in the mouth. Yep. That doesn't even mean a loss. That just means there's going to be, you know,
a home run an error leads to a run that wouldn't have happened otherwise. Yeah.
Yes. Something like that is going to happen. I'm not as bold as you to say what days they're going to lose or win. But I think Oklahoma wins the series, but I think they drop one. I think they win two and drop one. I do. I think I'm leaning. Guess.
That's how it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most surprising outcome for me, I mean, I think I would lean Oklahoma to win, but I think the most surprising outcome for me would be if either team sweeps.
Yeah.
That would be a pretty
early season statement. That'd be a pretty big statement, I think. Because at the end of the day, these are the two teams that have avoided a loss. So if somebody comes out of this undefeated, I mean, let's play that hypothetical. If South Carolina sweeps Oklahoma, where do they go? I mean, they're the last team undefeated. Do they, after what they did to Duke and they sweep Oklahoma, do they move 9 spots up to number one?
It'll obviously depend on what Texas and a couple of those other teams in the top five do, but I mean, especially,
it's gotta be.
I mean, I think whether they win or if they win the series, I think that would make it pretty interesting. If they win one or two of those games, really convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would, and see, like, to me, I'm not panicking. I wouldn't panic as an Oklahoma fan.
Oh, no, not at all.
My takeaway from that would be, is South Carolina like a World Series?
Yeah, like
contender.
They good, good. Yeah. Like, really good.
Yeah, especially on the road. I mean, it's going to be at Love's Field. That crowd is going to be crazy.
Yeah, and that's something that I can't speak from experience because I haven't been to a road game in the SEC yet, but
we went to Texas.
Okay. Last year. Fair. That's fair. It wasn't like Love's Field.
No, it wasn't.
Like, and I'm not saying that,
tweet it out. Ryan slams Texas softball fans.
Love's Field. I mean, it feels like you're in Oklahoma City playing at Devon Park. Like it has that feel to it. So it'll be an adjustment for South Carolina too, but I don't know, man. Yeah. I think the storyline would be Quincy Lilio gets it done the first game in her first day back, and then Oklahoma rebounds. Like that would be, if it was a storybook, that's how I would write it.
Can't wait for this weekend, man. It's going to be great. Well, I think that's going to do it for us here on the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate you guys watching as always. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel if you've not done so already. We've got the press conferences from yesterday with Mateer, Nagy, Venables. We've got the interviews with every single newcomer also on our OU Insider YouTube channel. We'll have post-game press conferences from OU softball this weekend. We'll have pods. We'll have all kinds of stuff as we get through the next few weeks. If you're not a VIP member over at OUinsider.com, never a better time to do that than right now with all kinds of things going on. You're going to want to make sure you don't miss a beat. Appreciate you guys as always. Appreciate Brian as always. We'll be back next week to talk more spring football and to talk more softball. Until then, we'll see you guys next time. Take it easy.